genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Bill Wozniak is the senior editor of Harper's Magazine. He revealed back in 2006 to be the inventor of the flash mob, having anonymously organized the first recognized example in New York City during the summer of 2003. In case you don't know what a flash mob is a large group of people who assemble suddenly in a public place, perform some unusual and usually pointless act for a brief time, and then disperse. The term flash mob is generally applied only to gatherings organized via telecommunications, social media, or viral emails. In 2010, he was surprised by the violence of some of the gatherings, and he said that mobs started as kind of a playful social experiment have gone suddenly awry. Bill Wozniak is the author of And Then There's This, How Stories Live and Die in the Viral Culture. Welcome to the show, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Well, good. We're happy to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being our guest today. Let's just jump right into it, if we can, please. And then there is this, it's your new book. It looks at viral culture. So for those of my listeners who might not know, what exactly is viral culture?
Well, to me, viral culture is actually all around us, and it's something that I think you experience even if you don't spend much time on the internet. For example, if you watch cable news, you see all of these little stories that kind of flicker through the news system. And this is something that's always been with us, but the internet has accelerated this process. A lot of stories that come to national attention begin online. Other times you'll have news stories that start on TV and then go online. And so to me, viral culture basically describes this kind of churning 24-hour information ecosystem that we all live in.
All right. So we used to call it in the media, the news cycle. You had a very distinct news cycle, probably started at 6 a.m. one day. And if you were lucky or unlucky, the news cycle ended at the end of that same day. So what you're saying, this has been around us forever. We experience it in other ways, whether we're on the internet or not. So let me ask you this. How did your book come about? I mean, what's the story behind the research that you did there?
Well, you told the audience about the Flash Mob Project, and that was something that was a sort of fun prank social experiment that I pulled off in the summer of 2003 that really turned me on to the power of these media. You know, I mean, I had gotten very interested in viral email. You know, you'd get something that had been forwarded from somebody, and you could scroll down and see, well, this person forwarded to this person, forwarded to this person. And, you know, at that time, it was sort of like, wow, this is this whole new medium that exists. And so I tried creating my own viral email that would get people to come to the same place at the same time, sort of for no reason, just as a joke. And I was amazed at how many people turned out. I was also amazed at how the idea began to spread to other cities. You know, people who read about it on blogs would take on the idea as their own and start their own flash mobs. And just within the span of a couple months, it had spread to every continent except Antarctica. And so I kind of found myself, I was the semi-anonymous inventor of the flash mob, but I found myself really as kind of an outsider, as an observer of this phenomenon, and sort of wondering, how did this get so big? Why are people so excited about this? And that sort of began the thought process that led to the book. In the book, I do, again, sort of tongue-in-cheek, a number of my own experiments in addition to the flash mob experiment. But I also survey the whole landscape of viral culture, as I call it, looking at politics, looking at music, looking at a bunch of different areas, looking at advertising, and to try to give a sort of incomplete portrait of the reality that we all live in now.
We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody. His book is And Then There's This. And what I found interesting, Bill, and you sort of alluded to it just there in your answer, you are a self-proclaimed satirist. So I didn't know reading your book whether to laugh or to cry at some of the things that I saw there. And you laughed too, because I think you probably intended it that way. But how did you decide to write a nonfiction book about the influence of technology on our culture? I mean, you know, you're a satirist by trade, so why this?
Well, you know, it's it just seems sort of like the most important thing around us. I do come from a place of being a satirist, but I'm also a magazine editor. And one of the things that sort of grabbed me as I started to get into this world was that, you know, there was this whole parallel media that was developing that then a few years ago became so popular that it kind of took over the whole media. You know, I mean, at this point, the biggest blogs are, often the blogs of major news organizations. You know, so this medium that was originally a sort of underground medium very quickly became a very dominant medium. And so now you have this big media ecosystem that, you know, influences the way that we talk to each other. And so, you know, as you can tell, like the projects were designed to be funny, but then, a lot of what I think about this stuff is serious. And so, you know, in the book, I try to balance those things, but, you know, be a little entertaining in describing my own projects and the projects of others, but then also make some pretty serious points about, you know, what this says about our political climate, what this says about how we listen to music and how we discover music. You know, I really feel like that this is the fundamental change that creative people and engaged people sort of have to deal with in the world.
Great. We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody. And getting down to your book, down to the basic levels, the basic unit in viral culture, you call it the nano story. And your book begins with an interesting nano story about Blair Hornstein. Now, if those of you don't remember, he was the notorious high school senior who sued for valedictorianship. So why did you start there, and what does Blair have to do with viral culture?
Well, you know, I picked her because Blair Hornstein, I'm not sure if it's Hornstein or Hornstein, but this was going on during around the same time that the Flash Mob Project was happening. And, you know, the thing that I realized was that if you actually go and break down a week's worth of news, what you find is that it's a collection of all of these tiny little stories. And by story, it might mean, you know, what we tend to think of as a story, like, well, here's a person and here's what they did and here's why, you know, you should care about it. But sometimes a story might be, you know, Barack Obama or, you know, whatever political figure makes some, you know, little misstep. And, you know, we're all going to talk about this gaffe for the span of, you know, 48 hours. Or, you know, or it could be something very serious, like, well, there's a natural disaster in some country.
The BP oil spill, something like
right,
that.
Right, of course. But, you know, and occasionally, like with the BP oil spill, something is big enough that it breaks through this kind of churning cycle of these tiny little stories. But for the most part, you know, we're very comfortable talking about things that don't last very long. We get very excited about them. We say, you know, oh, this is the most important thing in the world for about 24 hours, and then we forget about it. And there's a certain comfort in that, and it makes us feel like that the world has all kinds of new things to show us all the time, and we don't have to deal with thinking about some of the consequences.
Okay. We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody, and his book is titled And Then There's This. One of the things that I found interesting is that you do sort of look at your own experiments in a self-deprecating way. You laugh at your own experiments. But there are some really basic concepts behind the flash mob experiment. What are some of the things that this touched on in your mind?
Well, I would say, the first thing is, you know, and this is a big point, but I feel like it should be said, you know, we are social beings, and the real pull of the flash mob is the idea that you get a message saying that there's going to be a big crowd somewhere, and it's just pure curiosity. You want to go see it. You want to understand what's going to happen when all these people come out. And then there's also this desire for connection. You know, and this is something that I feel like this desire for connection is something that underlies so much of, you know, advertising. You know, you see cell phone ads where people are, you know, doing flash mob-like things and, you know, coming together in a big party type of environment. And I think that it speaks to the fact that we desire that kind of human connection, to feel like we're a part of like a big exciting crowd. In some ways, more because so many of our communications have become so disintermediated. You know, we keep up all of these virtual connections, but in some ways, it makes it more exciting to sort of see that in the physical world. And that, I would say, is another one of the big sort of principles of the flash mob that made it so big, is that, you know, you take these virtual networks and you make them physical. And there's something about that action that is very, very exciting to people.
So what you're saying is a virtual network such as Facebook is only satisfying up to a certain point. We still crave people contact. We still crave connection, as you say, because we're social beings. But because your book, you've written it in such a way that you can both laugh and cry at each of these experiments, I'm going to take the cry side on this experiment for just a minute. You said, okay, we're social beings. We have curiosity. We have this need for connection. And I agree with all of that. However, the flip side is we're also bored out of our minds. And so we do this out of boredom. And as a group, we sort of act in a herd mentality too, don't we?
No, absolutely. And you know, I poke some fun at that idea because, you know, I feel like a lot of great creativity is born out of boredom. And certainly something like the flash mob, you know, is it's basically other than, you know, the occasional, you know, violent example, as you alluded to, you know, it's basically just people out there having fun, you know, wanting to try something out and have a good time. But I agree with you on the dark side, especially when it comes to politics. You know, I mean, only one chapter of my book is devoted to politics, but definitely the book was inspired by, you know, some of my frustration with politics in this country. And I think you see it all around us. You know, people are obsessed with these tiny little scandals, and a lot of times it's lies. These things fly around, and you know, it is the herd mentality, but it also is born of boredom. You don't want to criticize somebody because, you know, you disagree with his policies. You want to criticize him because, you know, you might just have evidence that he's, you know, the spawn of Satan. and that's just a part. It's become a part of our political discourse, and I feel like that the internet has entrenched that. It's made it something where everybody can engage in all of this sort of conspiracy mongering and such.
In many ways, it's amplified it, hasn't it, Bill? I mean, because you can say something, as you say, on the internet, and all of a sudden it gets connected through your friends on Facebook, on Twitter, and it's out into the hands of tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people.
No, absolutely. And through just old-fashioned, you know, email forwarding. Like, I would say a lot of the political misinformation in this country, the most important political misinformation in this country, is just spread by people sending these chain emails to each other. You know, you might get them from your mom or your grandma or whoever, but these emails that you can't tell who wrote them, and they're just filled with one lie after another. I mean, that is a big method of political communication in this country.
We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody. His book is titled And Then There's This, and we're going to have to break here, Bill, for some commercials. So I want you to think about this while we're on commercial break, because many of the people listening to the sounds of our voices right now are in business. They're either listening to us in their office or possibly even over their computer at their office. So when you come back, I want to discuss the findings of your experiments on word-of-mouth marketing and how the internet affects that. Don't answer it now. Answer it after we get back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. My special guest in this half hour is Bill Wasik. He's the author of the book, And Then There's This, How Stories Live and Die in Viral Culture. And before we get back to Bill, we do have some ice cream to give away. I mentioned that before. You wanted to keep the telephone number handy. I will be giving away McConnell's coupon for an ice cream or a cup of ice cream to the third caller who calls in at 639-0008, 639-0008. Call in and the ice cream is yours. Just perfect, because we're coming up on lunchtime. You might want something a little bit sweet after you finish your lunch. Now, Bill, back to you. As I mentioned, a lot of our listeners are listening at the office. They're in business. They might even be business owners themselves. Discuss your experiment and your findings of the experiment on word-of-mouth marketing.
marketing was a little bit sort of tongue-in-cheek, I decided to create an online identity called Bill Schiller, where the joke was that I would spend 30 days trying to forward as many viral marketing campaigns as possible, you know, participate in them online and send them to my friends, et cetera, et cetera, to really sort of ask myself, you know, does this stuff work? And frankly, you know, my verdict and my verdict also sort of watching stuff develop since I wrote the book is that I don't really think viral marketing works very well at all.
Why not? That's interesting because there's so many people out there hawking viral marketing. Do this, do that, be on Twitter, be on Facebook. Why doesn't it work?
You know, my take on it is that we are so inundated with media, especially in the internet, that even if you are able to create some kind of an ad that people forward around, you know, they just don't engage with it very seriously. And so what'll happen is, you know, you'll make something that's funny and viral, and probably because it's viral, it means that it doesn't really sell your product very well. It's probably just more purely funny. And then people look at it and they laugh, and then it's on to the next thing. You know, it's on to the cat video that their aunt sent them. You know, and so I think it's, you know, first of all, the odds of succeeding are so low. And second of all, when you do succeed, there's just very little engagement with it.
Interesting. Now, aren't we playing off of our own personal reputation to that inner circle of people that are our closest friends in social media? I mean, you would think that that would work with them.
I think that that's right. But I feel like with most viral advertising, you know, basically people are sending the ad because they think that it's funny or entertaining. Now, I do believe that word of mouth as a seller of products is very important. You are likely, if your friend emails you and says, "Hey, I got this Weber grill, and man, it's fantastic. You should get one," then you're going to take that very, very seriously. The trick, though, is that, you know, even though advertisers know that, how you capitalize on that as a medium, you know, or to even consider that a medium at all, then becomes more complicated, because in order to make an ad that somebody who likes a grill is going to forward along, you need to make it funny or weird or sort of a piece of entertainment, and then suddenly it loses a lot of its efficacy. People get it and they think, "Oh, well, he didn't send this to me because he thinks it's a good grill. He sent it to me because, you know, he thinks I'll get a laugh out of it."
I see. All right, we're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody, author of the book And Then There's This. And just a reminder to everybody out there, if you want to call in and win the ice cream, the telephone number is 639-0008, 639-0008. Bill, one of the other things that experiments that I found very interesting in your book is the story about going to report on the Huffington Post contest to build a well-visited website, and then how you entered into the contest yourself and actually won it. Tell us that story.
This was a really, really fun chapter of the book, because it was really the best chance that I had to not only to create my own sort of viral, you know, website, but also to go out into the world and meet some of these people who are making viral stuff. So the Huffington Post used to have a competition called the Contagious Festival, where basically anybody could enter, and the only rule was you made a website that got as many hits as possible, and the only rule was no porn and no spam, meaning you couldn't put porn on your site, and you couldn't send around spam to try to get people to visit it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you could do anything, and the winner was the one that got the most hits. And so what I did was I went to them as a journalist and said, "Hey, I want to cover this festival, and so can you put me in touch with some of the participants so I can go out and interview them?" But then, meanwhile, under a pseudonym, I secretly entered the competition myself. And so it was really fun. I spent the month, you know, traveling around and meeting some of these really weird and interesting people who were making these sites. And then meanwhile, I was secretly watching my own numbers and trying to, you know, hoping that I was going to win and, you know, crossing my fingers. So it's a very enjoyable chapter.
And how many unique visitors did you end up getting from that, Bill?
Oh, gosh. It was, I think at this point, it's well over 200,000. Maybe around the time the competition was over, it was about 150 or 160,000.
Wow.
There was a point when it just took off. You know, and this is another big lesson of the book, is that, you know, very rarely do things go viral in a slow way. You know, know, that's basically a contradiction in terms. you don't just build up very slowly. What happens is the traffic trickles in, and then suddenly just something gets critical mass, and the thing just goes everywhere. And that was what happened in this. I was in 10th place around the middle of the month, and then within the span of about 48 hours, suddenly it got picked up by a bunch of blogs, and it got forwarded around, and before I knew it, not only was I number one in the competition, but I was head and shoulders above all the others.
So you lapped them, in other words, Bill. That's great.
Yeah, I know, and it was funny because I really spent the first half of the month thinking that this was just going to be the most embarrassing, tale of defeat in my whole book. But then, pleasantly, it turned into a story of great victory.
Well, we're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody, and Bill, I know you are a student of other writers as well. You really hit what Malcolm Gladwell calls the tipping point, didn't you? You went from 10th place to first place in a matter of 48 hours. It just hit that tipping point.
No, I think that's right, and I do think that certainly one place that the word viral, as a metaphor, the idea that of social epidemics is very, very applicable to the internet. You can see it happen in the charts and graphs. And my book, by the way, is full of charts and graphs for readers who like charts and graphs.
For those who do like charts and graphs, they're all in there. Well, let me ask you the bigger overriding question, Bill. Do you think that viral culture has made us more or less connected, and why?
I feel like it's made us more connected, but at a price. And I think, honestly, that the price is a price that's worth paying, in the sense that I don't think we would want to give up all of the benefits that, Facebook and email and all of these technologies give us. I don't think we want to put that genie back in the bottle. But I do feel like that, for myself and for a lot of the people I talk to in the course of writing the book and talk to in the course of reading from the book, feel the way that I do, that we need to carve out spaces away from this always-on media in order to think bigger thoughts, because otherwise those thoughts just won't get thought.
Well, and in fact, you end the book that way. You have recommendations at the end of the book by Jay Silverstein, Mark Bitterman, and Intel Corporation about going offline for a period of time. Expand on that a little bit for me.
Yeah, so all of these people or groups basically have variations on the idea that you should set aside a chunk of time where you turn everything off. Jake is the editor of Texas Monthly, and his idea was Internet Ramadan. So, there's a month where you only use the web after sundown. Mark Bittman's idea was, set aside one day of the week. So it's the same, Intel, it was a few hours a day. But basically the premise is the same, that you sort of create these oases where you're just not going to be subject to all of the demands of all of these media. And it's an imperfect solution, but I think that we wouldn't want to get rid of all of these tools, but we can't sort of be the slaves of these tools. And so I think that's really the way to try to do it.
Well, there's irony in this too, though, Bill, because we are in this interconnected world where we're living in sound bites and short bursts of information. When we turn off like that, can our brains really go back to thinking the big thoughts and living with ourselves in that vacuum?
I think that is a concern. And Nick Carr, who's a wonderful writer on technology, has published a book called The Shallows, where he uses neuroscience to argue that we are permanently changing our brain chemistry in such a way that we're making deep thinking less possible. I don't know if that's true. For me, I feel like that, this is the world that we live in, and if we were to try to shut this stuff out entirely, then it would be a withdrawal from culture that would be irresponsible also in its own way. And so I think it's left to us to carve out the space that we can and to, enjoy the benefits of these media, but then try to get some distance on them and to try to get some distance on the sort of speed of the culture around us by setting aside some time for reflective thinking.
Well said. We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody, author of the book, And Then There's This, How Stories Live and Die in the Viral Culture. Bill, we've only got about a minute left, but I want to go a little bit techie here, because in your book, you discuss memes pretty often. How would you describe what a meme is?
So the word meme was invented by Richard Dawkins, the biologist, and he meant it as a sort of analog for a gene. So in the same way that in evolutionary theory, you can see evolution as on some level being about not about, you know, species or even about individuals, but about our genes actually sort of fighting to win out and to be propagated in you know, through reproduction. And similarly, he sort of had this idea, well, what if we looked at culture and said, you know, memes are like genes. They're these ideas that infect us. And so it's very much like a viral idea, and this term was coined back in the 70s. You know, these days often people use the word meme to describe sort of a catchy idea that spreads over the internet. In my book, I sort of use it interchangeably with viral to sort of describe what I see as the way that everything spreads these days. It's fast, it's electronic, it's person to person, but that all those person to person connections add up to something that's almost as big as the mass media. So when you hear people talk about memes, that's basically what they're talking about.
All right, great. We're talking to Bill Wasik, everybody, author of the book, And Then There's This. Bill, people have listening to the sound of your voice. They're interested in what they hear. Where would you direct them to learn more, to find your book? Where would you send them on the internet?
Well, sure. I mean, Amazon.com is a great seller of books. Barnes & Noble, there's a great site called IndieBound if you're interested in finding books at independent bookstores near you. But all those places are great. And you can find more about the book on my website, which is billwasik.com. I would love it. I had a fun time writing it, and I hope that people would have a fun time reading it.
Well, Bill, it's a fun book. I highly recommend it. You're a great radio guest. Thank you so much for joining us here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care. And if you are interested in what Bill has written, you can find it not only at those places that he mentioned, but don't forget you can also find it at Bank of Books here in Ventura. Two convenient locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. That brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. Go out there and make it a wonderful day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.